Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. California Governor Jerry Brown's proposal to overhaul K-12 funding is back in the news. He first proposed his local control funding formula plan back in January, and he's calling his plan a civil rights issue. According to the San Jose Mercury News, of the $49 billion that will go into K-12 spending, Governor Brown wants to direct an additional $2 billion towards school districts with high concentrations of poor students, foster youth, and those struggling to learn English. He's also proposing to let local school districts decide how they want to spend that money. But not everyone agrees with this plan. Some Democrats say they believe more education money is definitely needed, but this plan might not be the best answer. State Democrats, including Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberger and Senator Mark Leno, support Education Bill SB 69, which calls for funds to spread more evenly among school districts. They say their main argument is that under Governor Brown's new plan, many poor students in wealthier districts might lose out by remaining invisible. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about Governor Brown's plan. Who will win under this plan and who will be left behind? Today, we're joined by Jonathan Kaplan, Senior Policy Analyst with the California Budget Project, a nonprofit whose goal is to improve public policies affecting low and middle income California residents. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Arun Ramanathan. He's Executive Director of the Education Trust West. That's an Oakland-based statewide educational policy organization focusing on closing achievement and opportunity gaps for low-income students and students of color. And Arun joins us here in studio. Hi, Arun. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you. So, Jonathan, let's start off with you because you solely focus on budget issues. A lot of people are saying that this is the biggest change to school funding since the passage of Prop 13 in 1978. How big of a deal is this new plan?
It is a big deal. The governor really should be commended for putting forth his proposal. The local control funding formula is an important step forward. While it doesn't really address all of our problems, it addresses inequities in school finance by aligning funding with the actual cost of educating the state's students. You know, the getting down to fact studies that were put out about several years ago show that low-income kids cost at least 30% more to educate, and English language learners cost at least 24% more. So the governor's proposal really puts money where these kids are and provides the additional resources to the students in the state that need them most.
And what would you add to that, Arun, just in terms of how big of a deal this is?
It's an enormously big deal. And one thing I'd add to what Mr. Kaplan was saying is that under the governor's plan, every school district gets a lot more money. But with school districts with low-income students and also English learners will get extra money to support those students' needs. And then where school districts have high concentrations, those districts with high concentrations of low-income students will get an extra little bump on top of that. So what the governor is talking about is increasing funding for all schools and all school districts, but with the extra money that we've never as a state provided on an equitable basis for English learners and low-income students.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that, how schools are funded now and what the equity problems are now. But before we do that, where did this plan originate? Who planted this seed?
Well, this seed's been around for a very long time. And Mr. Kaplan also talked a little bit about the getting down to fact studies that came out, about 10 years ago, I believe. And the essence of those, when they looked at California's funding system, was that it was essentially completely inequitable, completely irrational. Nobody could understand it. There's only about six people in Sacramento who could understand it and then make a lot of money off of explaining it to other people. So what they recommended was, let's simplify it. Let's make sure that everybody gets a lot more money, and then simultaneously make sure that we talk about how we fund our schools based on need in a way that the public can understand.
Jonathan, what would you add to that? Who was really involved in coming up with this proposal?
Well, as Arun put forth, the getting down to fact studies, which were actually in 2007, not a big deal. It's about 6 years ago. There were studies in the series of studies that pointed to the need to reform the state's education finance system. And then an associated study in those studies was one that the governor looked to in terms of forming this proposal. And in fact, the current State Board of Education president, Michael Kirst, was an author of a study for which this local control funding formula is modeled after.
And so we're talking about an additional $2 billion?
Well, actually, it's a little unclear exactly how, when you're talking about the $2 billion, I think you're referring to what Arun put forth as the portion of these dollars that are for concentration grants. The governor has said that this proposal over the course of the next several years would provide $15.5 billion extra dollars on an annual basis to school districts across the state. How much of that goes to any individual part of the plan is a little, it's not entirely clear. But what we do know is that there is going to be a large increase in funding, as Arun said, for all districts in this state, not just for those that have large portions of English learners or low-income students.
And where will this money come from?
Well, I think the governor's put forth that the growth in the state's economy and the amount of dollars that are dedicated to K-12 schools and community colleges through the Proposition 98 guarantee would be portions of what these where these dollars are coming from. So the dollars that are dedicated to schools through current constitutional guarantees are where the dollars arrive from.
So let's talk a little bit about how funding takes place now. Arun, your organization, Education Trust West, has a report called Cruel Divide, which focuses on this very issue.
Yes. You know, last year we did a report, and we've done a number of different reports on school finance, just looking at the equity issues. And what we found when we looked at the highest poverty and the lowest poverty school districts in California, that there was about a $620 difference per student. So poorer districts were getting less money from state and local sources than wealthy districts. And so this is part of what the governor's model is intended to fix. One of the things about California's education system is it's not only inequitable, so you see these differences between wealth and poverty, but it's also just completely irrational. So you could often see even individual districts that are right next to each other receiving very different amounts of dollars, even if they have similar populations. And that's because it's been a structure that's been developed over 25 or 30 years. They've never taken anything away. They've only added on top. So what the governor's proposal is also going to do, in addition to solving these equity issues, is simplify the system.
So $620 difference. Can you give us a clear example? I often think of like a Orinda versus a Richmond, for example.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There was a couple of, in the paper, there's a couple of examples. One that we found in the South Bay, and I'm trying to remember which one that was, and then one in the San Diego region. But it was literally two districts that were right next to each other where the dollar difference was just so substantially different that you couldn't figure out, you know, why it's that case. And you know, on an annual basis, we publish, you know, data on student outcomes in school districts. And in that report card, it's called a district report card, we also list the amount of dollars that each of these districts receive. And there's just no coherence in it. You know, it just, you know, some districts will have $6,500, some will have $9,500. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
Will this plan actually add some reason to this?
This plan, and equity and rationality, those are the two elements of the plan that we feel are extraordinarily important.
And what would you add to that, Jonathan? When you look at the equity problems in our current system, what really stands out for you?
Well, just as Arun has said, I mean, there are major problems with the current system as relates to the issue of equity. And to speak to your question about, you know, what this would mean for a particular district, we're putting out a study this coming Thursday that's going to look at several districts and point to these inequities. For example, in Contra Costa County, you can look at two districts, Pittsburgh Unified and the Mount Diablo Unified School District. Pittsburgh has approximately twice the number of low-income students than Mount Diablo has, but it receives less dollars per student. And as Arun pointed out, I mean, the issue here has to do with school districts in similar areas, that is, with similar labor costs, that's the largest portion of school district costs, are receiving different amounts of money for no real rational reason. And the governor's local control funding formula would make the system much more equitable and more transparent in the sense of understanding why different districts would receive different amounts of dollars.
And have you also looked at how this is affecting students and teachers and their ability to teach effectively?
Looked at the current system?
Yes.
Well, you know what what we see is that different districts, by receiving different resources, have different amounts of money to address the needs of their particular groups of students. So clearly, when there are disparities in funding, what you'll find is school districts have more money, for example, to offer salary packages for their employees and can therefore attract potentially better faculty or better administrators to their schools. So what you see is those inequities translating into the differences in what schools can provide to their students.
Well, what's interesting here is some Democrats are offering their own school funding plan. You've got SB 69, co-authored by a number of senators, Jerry Hill, Democrat from San Mateo, Mark Leno, Democrat from San Francisco. We invited him to join us, but he is unable to. We'll actually be joined at 45 after by Senator Lonnie Hancock, Democrat from Oakland. But some of these Democrats are arguing that under this plan, some of the poor students in these wealthier districts might lose out by remaining invisible. What are your thoughts on that, Jonathan?
Well, you know, this idea of invisible students, it really comes down to how are the dollars that are going to be a part of any proposed change to the state's education finance system, how they will be divided up. And the issue is, if you are providing in the current proposal, in the local control funding formula proposal, concentration grants for students in districts that where there are more than 50% low-income and English language learners. That's the governor's proposal. I think the Senate proposal, as put forth by SB 69, would take those dollars and put them elsewhere. The question is, where would they be put? If they're put into what is called the base grant, that is the grant for all students statewide, then you would be watering down the amount of dollars that would be provided for the very students that I think they're saying would be quote-unquote forgotten. So if you are moving dollars away from the concentration grant towards other areas, you need to ask where those areas are and whether the dollars are being provided for the students who need them the most.
And what do you think about that argument, Arun, that kids will be left behind, the poor kids in the wealthier districts?
Well, I think it's tremendously disappointing that our Democrats are making that argument, and on a couple of different levels. I mean, one of the arguments that they've been throwing out is that the governor's notion that districts with concentrated poverty need additional dollars has no research basis. That is simply false. There is tremendous amounts of research indicating that as the district's poverty increases, and the Getting Down to Facts studies did a good job of this, that need increases simultaneously. And as we've indicated, those poorest districts in our state are already receiving less funding than the richest districts in our state. So it's deeply disturbing that they're throwing out that argument. The second argument about vanished students or disappeared students is simply a red herring. First of all, every district is getting a base grant, essentially an amount of dollars that all districts are going to receive. Then for every student that they have that's low income and an English learner, they're going to get an additional amount of dollars on top of that. And then only for those districts that have concentrated poverty above 50% is this additional money coming in. And it comes in on a sliding scale. So it's not even all of that much money when you think about it, when you compare those other two big pots. What they're essentially talking about is watering the proposal down. And for Democrats that I thought were focused on equity, that's very unfortunate.
Why would they want to water it down?
You have to ask them.
Lonnie Hancock, actually, it looks like, I'm not sure if she's a co-author of this bill. In this article, a couple different articles, she's not named in here. But you've got, so for example, Senator Steinberg is quoted in the Mercury News saying, we asked the question, are we concerned about poor school districts or are we concerned about poor schools and poor kids? The governor's way of doing it, not his goals or intent, leaves poor kids who are in non-poor school districts invisible. This, too, is a civil rights issue.
Okay. Again, I would have to remind the folks that wrote that particular line that the school districts with low-income students and English learners are receiving additional dollars already for those students, right? It's just whether or not they have concentrated poverty above 50%. Then they get on a sliding scale an additional amount of dollars. So no student is invisible in the governor's proposal. What's happening is that there's a huge pushback coming from suburban school districts as part of this effort that the governor is indicating. Now, everybody is getting more money under the model, but some people aren't getting quite as much money as other people, and that's the backstory here.
And that is Arun Ramanathan, Executive Director of Education Trust West, an Oakland-based statewide educational policy organization focusing on closing achievement and opportunity gaps for low-income students and students of color. We're also joined by Jonathan Kaplan, Senior Policy Analyst with the California Budget Project, a nonprofit whose goal is to improve public policies affecting low- and middle-income California residents. And today on Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about Governor Jerry Brown's new proposal to overhaul K-12 funding. Many say that this is the biggest change to school funding since the passage of Prop 13 in 1978. So this is a big deal. This is going to direct more money to districts with high concentrations of poor students, foster youth, and those struggling to learn English. It's also going to let school districts decide how they actually spend that money. So what are your thoughts on this? What questions do you have about this new funding plan? If you work in schools, if you're a teacher or an administrator, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What do you think of the way funding education is funded now, and what are your thoughts on this new plan? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. And if you have a question for Senator Lonnie Hancock, she'll be joining us at 45 after. We've got an email from a listener from Chuck, who says, can you please comment on how funding differences can be exacerbated by communities' ability to raise additional funds? Is there any fair way to take that into account? Now, because of budget cuts, families, obviously, in wealthier areas have been able to raise money for things like computer and dance and art class. So, Jonathan, have you taken that into account at the California Budget Project?
Sure. We take a look at that issue. The challenge is that many times the state's accounting system is not accurately depicting the amount of resources that parents and others in the community can provide to particular schools. What we do know is that there are many schools, districts in this state that have access to additional resources through either parental contributions of dollars or, more importantly, in many instances, their time through volunteer hours, whereas low-income districts where parents are hard-strapped and trying to make ends meet by working several jobs potentially are not as capable of providing those additional resources. And one of the untold parts of this story is that the local control funding formula, while providing extra dollars to districts with large numbers of low-income kids, there is no way to depict the full amount of extra resources that some districts are able to provide that have, the ability to do so. So I think the question, it points to an important piece of this puzzle.
Right. And Arun, what would you add to that?
Well, this is what we call the double whammy. You have low-income districts that are receiving fewer dollars to begin with. And then when you look at the process, when they go through, for instance, budget cuts, they are stripping away all of those extra services and supports that kids who enter school with less desperately need: summer school, after-school programs, counseling supports. A wealthy school district, and this happened in the South Bay, had a district that was going to do layoffs, and they raised $2 million in 2 weeks to save their teachers. Wow. Wealthy school districts can do that stuff all the time. And so, again, I got to point out with the governor's proposal, he's given more money to everybody else, but he's finally recognizing this need. He's finally recognizing the circumstances that low-income districts are in.
Has this been done anywhere else in the country?
You know, I think that there's some similar models in other places. I believe it's Rhode Island has done something similar. But this really is unique in terms of the way that the governor is pushing the model.
And then so once the school districts get this extra money, administrators and school boards will decide how the money will be spent. And I know, Arun, that's the one thing that you're looking at is accountability and transparency.
Yes. And you know, the proposal definitely, from our perspective on a number of levels, and SB 69 has some of these issues addressed in it, can be improved. And I think that the governor's folks have been receptive to thinking about this. One of them is in assurances, right? So if you're going to give extra dollars for low-income students and English learners, you want to make sure that those dollars are used to support their needs down at the school level. The only way you can know that is if there's actually transparency in funding so that the public can understand how dollars flow from the state to the district to the schools. And then lastly, you want to make sure that those dollars have a beneficial impact for students. Because quite frankly, you know, the way that we've run it is we've said at the state level, we're going to say you, district, have to do this program, this program, this program. This is a new level of freedom for districts. But with a new level of freedom comes an increased level of accountability.
And we have a question about that from a caller. So let's hear from Kishore in San Francisco. Hi, Kishore. Welcome to the show. Hello, Kishore. I think we lost Kishore. Sorry about that. You can give us a call back. Kishore wanted to know more about accountability and how schools spend money at the local level. Jonathan, do you have anything to add on that? Because that's an important question.
Well, funding accountability is definitely key. The question about this proposal is whether, in fact, dollars that are dedicated for disadvantaged students will be spent to provide services for those students. And as Arun pointed out, there definitely is some room for improvement in the governor's proposal, and there's, as he stated as well, I think openness on the part of the governor to refine how we would look at accountability. One of the things that is important is to make sure that these resources actually reach these students, and in order to know that, we will need to have more transparency in terms of understanding what dollars are actually spent for which kids.
And what are you hearing from administrators? What is the greatest need right now in terms of funding? Arun?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting because one of the essences of LCFF is this notion of local control. So at a state level, for years, the focus has been hire a lobbyist in Sacramento and get them to push for your particular program, right? Well, it's now going to be up to communities, districts, principals to start thinking about, okay, well, what mix of different programs is going to lead to better outcomes for low-income students and English learners? That's a new level of freedom that districts haven't had for 25, 30 years.
Well, and will they be able to be creative with this money, or will it be used to plug the hole from all of the budget cuts we've seen over the last couple of years?
And that's going to be a discussion in every district in California if this comes through. You know, are we going to be seeing, you know, simply hole plugging, or are we going to, again, be seeing a new way of thinking about delivering services and supports and addressing student and school needs?
Do you think it'll be more community oriented? Will parents have a voice? Will people who care about these issues have a voice about how this money is spent?
I think so. I think that's the goal, and I think that's another thing that a way we can improve this proposal.
Well, and I'd love to hear listeners on this, because if you were to have a voice about how this new money was spent in your area, what would you say? And what are your thoughts about this new plan? If you're an administrator or an educator, we'd love to hear from you. Today we're talking about Jerry Brown's new local control funding formula. We'll be back after this.
Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. This is Your Call with Rose Aguilar, a program that relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK, or you can post a comment or question on the website, yourcallradio.org. There you will also find a link to signing up for our email newsletter at yourcallradio.org.
We'll be right back.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Hana Baba will be speaking with Peggy Ornstein about her recent New York Times Magazine piece, Our Feel-Good War on Breast Cancer. Peggy Ornstein has battled breast cancer. She once believed a mammogram saved her life, but now she is questioning the promotion of early detection and the ongoing cult of pink. So how have you been affected by breast cancer awareness campaigns? That is tomorrow on Thursday. We will have a debate about geoengineering and the environment. And on Friday, we'll have a conversation with journalist Jeremy Scahill about his new book, Dirty Wars. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy show by talking about California Governor Jerry Brown's proposal called Local Control Funding Formula. This would direct additional money towards school districts with higher concentrations of poor students, foster youth, and kids struggling to learn English. He also wants to let local school districts decide how they want to spend that money. And one of today's guests, Arun Ramanathan, says this is going to completely change the nature of advocacy and give school boards a larger voice. So if you're on a school board, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about this new plan? If you're an administrator or a teacher, if you have a child in school, what do you think are the best ways to close the achievement gap and really channel more resources to poor students? And if you have any questions about this plan, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And what do you think about some Democrats' argument that this is going to leave poor students in wealthier districts behind because they might remain invisible? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. And Senator Lonnie Hancock, who actually is a co-sponsor of SB 69, which these Democrats say they would distribute the money more evenly, will be on with us in just about 10 or so minutes. So if you have a question for her, you can also let us know about that. Today, we're joined by Arun Ramanathan, Executive Director of Education Trust West, and Jonathan Kaplan, Senior Policy Analyst with the California Budget Project. So, Arun, talk a little bit more about how this really changes the nature of advocacy, because that's also a very big deal in all of this.
Well, again, I think for the last, two decades, the way that you functioned in our state was to go to Sacramento and advocate that the state create a categorical program. And, you know, the program might have been around arts or music or PE or career and technical education or a whole host of activities. We had about 60 or 70 of these categorical programs in our state. And some of them just piled up on top of each other. The shift that we're talking about here is when this money comes down to the local level, it's much more transparent. The hope is that there'll be a lot more community pressure and community involvement in it. And communities are going to have to decide. You know, school boards can't say anymore, Sacramento told us to spend the money this way. Mm-hmm. Communities are going to have to decide what is the focus, what's the need, and what's going to take the district to the next level of performance, and what's going to be the best thing for kids.
So a lot more community control, it sounds like.
A lot more community control.
So if you're a parent concerned about your kid, maybe you're involved, or maybe you're not because you're so busy, and you feel like your voice doesn't matter. How will this change your experience with your child's education?
Well, and that's another big question, right? So when districts get these dollars, if you know that, I mean, the essence is what we'd like to see is that as many of these dollars as possible gets right down to the school and classroom level. And that's going to be the focus for parents. I mean, they're going to have to hold their districts accountable for one, making sure that schools and students who generated the dollars get those monies. And then secondly, that the outcomes for those kids are good. You know, that's the two levels of advocacy.
So here's an example, Jonathan. Melanie in Discovery Bay just called. She couldn't stay on. She says her son is a special needs student, and she's worried that spending will be mostly administrative, not on what kids and her son specifically especially need. So what role can Melanie play as we're sort of learning about how this is going to work?
Well, first thing I'll say about special needs students is that special education dollars are outside of the formula. So while there are going to be ways in which dollars are reallocated in the formula, special education is not one of those places. It's a federal mandate, and those dollars are specifically required to be spent to support special needs students. In terms of how...
So just on that point, though, really quick,
yeah.
If a school board comes up and says, hey, we've got a lot of special needs students, and we feel like they've been hit by budget cuts, we need to do something more for them. They're not able to do that?
No. What it means is that the dollars that are currently allocated for special education will remain allocated for special education. Those dollars that are part of the formula, districts will have a decision as to how they will use them. So they could, in fact, add more dollars to those needs, those programs for special needs kids if they decided that that was a priority. So it isn't taking any dollars away. It is providing the opportunity for school districts to use dollars that are within the formula for the priorities that the district considers appropriate for their local district.
So what would you say to Melanie?
Melanie would need to be, as I'm sure Melanie is, a strong advocate for her child in the school district in question. And in terms of the question about whether there are, you know, these dollars would go towards administrative costs, I think many times that's overblown, and really the largest portion of dollars are dedicated to classrooms. So the question would be whether or not programs that are specifically tailored for individual kids will be supported, and it'll depend upon parents to be able to speak up for those individual programs. One of the concerns, however, is that for parents that don't have the ability to do that or are challenged in terms of doing that, maybe they don't speak English or maybe they are working three jobs and not able to attend school board meetings as often as others, the question would be, how do we make sure that students for whom dollars are allocated for low-income students, for example, how do we make sure that those dollars are actually spent to support services for those students? And that's one of the accountability questions that we've been discussing.
So how do we do that, Arun?
Well, you know, in terms of accountability, I think we sort of look at it in three ways. One, we want to make sure that districts are accountable for spending the dollars on the students that generated them. So we want to make sure that there's strong language in the proposal around that. And we're hopeful that the administration will do that. As part of the proposal, what the governor has put in is that every district has to come up with a plan. And this plan has a number of goals in it and a number of targets. And then the county, it has to approve the plan and the district's budget and see whether they're in alignment. So, for instance, if you get a bunch of additional dollars for English learners, you should be able to see in the district's plan and the district's budget how they're going to spend the money on improving services for English learners. So that's another level of accountability. And the third level is, if the district doesn't actually improve any outcomes for English learners, what then does the county do and what then does the state do? That's a bit of a gray area, and that's an area that the governor can improve. And the senators who are behind SB 69 have some thoughts around that.
Well, and we'll ask Senator Lonnie Hancock in just about 5 minutes. But we have a related caller on this issue. So let's hear from Patty in Watsonville. Hi, Patty. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sure.
One of my questions is, I'm wondering whether or not if we're returning, which I like the idea where we're going to return the money to a local control, trying to get the money back to the classroom. Part of the problem is that the state of California education system, when we send our tax dollars to Sacramento for education, and, you know, just a little piddling comes back to the local district, and a lot of it stays in Sacramento. Is this proposal going to break down some of the bogger jams that we have in Sacramento, where all the money just gets stuck there? That's one of my questions. And then the other part is, as far as accountability, the very people that you're asking to hold the school district accountable are the poor people who are, you know, they don't have the time, they don't have the resources, they don't have the education to be able to argue with their school board. And that seems like a real hole in your proposal. And I'm thinking about, and I think it was Downey, they had a mayor, which is a very poor area, and they had a mayor that was making $600,000 a year or something like that. because nobody was paying attention. Hmm. So that's my question. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's an interesting point, Arun. What happens if you're in a poor community and the parents just don't have, like you said, that don't have the time or the ability to get involved?
Again, I think, you know, two things. One, I think it's going to be a shift for advocates around the state to shift their focus back to local communities instead of focusing on Sacramento. So we're going to have to make an effort to empower local communities, and we're going to have to make that the focus of work after LCFF goes through. The second thing I would argue is that the governor's proposal, just like we were talking before, has a process where the county provides oversight of districts' plans and progress. So the county role and county authority has to be increased there, and there's still going to need to be a role for accountability and enforcement on behalf of the county and the state if they see districts just not taking this money, spending it on the kids that generated it or spending it effectively.
And I'm assuming that groups like yours are going to pay very close attention to this.
Yes.
When the money rolls out. You keep saying LCFF, and I just want to mention that, again, that's Local Control Funding Formula, Governor Jerry Brown's new plan that would direct additional money towards school districts with high concentrations of poor students, foster youth, and those struggling to learn English. And Jonathan, what about Patty's question about log jams in Sacramento where money gets stuck? How will that be dealt with here?
Well, I think, frankly, that's a bit of a myth, that there's dollars. When general fund dollars go to the state's coffers, specific amounts of those dollars are dedicated through the Proposition 98 guarantee to go back to local schools through Prop 98 funding on a per-pupil basis. So this idea that somehow or another dollars end up stuck in Sacramento is just not true. There are small amounts of dollars that are used to provide funding for the California Department of Education, which administers this very large system, but it's really negligible when it comes to the overall amount of money that's spent across the state to support local schools.
Do you have some information about this on your website?
Yes, there's plenty of information about how schools receive and spend their dollars on our website.
And also just about the logjam in Sacramento.
Sure. We speak to this issue all the time in terms of how what state dollars, we say state dollars are really local dollars. More than three-quarters of all dollars that are sent to Sacramento, so to speak, are spent in local communities across the state. Mm. And the remaining quarter is actually mostly spent on the University of California and California State University system. So if you have one of those in your local community, the dollars are being spent in your local community as well.
That would be an interesting show. And I'm also wondering how much goes to prisons.
There's also a portion that does provide, that is actually also what we, state dollars that are provided for, you know, corrections, and that's a portion of where state dollars go.
That's a big one. All right, thank you for that, and thank you for calling in, Patty. Let's go next to Pam in San Francisco. Hi, Pam.
Hi, I'm a teacher in San Francisco, and I teach at an urban school that has a lot of students living in poverty. And I'm excited about the governor's plan. It sounds really hopeful. I work at a school that has worked really hard to write grants to bring services to our students, and we've seen a huge shift in our students' achievement with having therapy services and extended day after school, for example. And I was just wondering more about the accountability issue, because we've had success because we have a social worker who is responsible for writing these grants and trying to create a community school. And I was wondering if there's any way that some of the money can be used for hiring a person at the school to find, you know, therapists to come into the school, for example, or dentists or stuff like that.
All right. Thank you. Arun, do you know?
Great question. When LCFF goes through, that's the kind of pressure, that's the kind of advocacy that we're going to need to see happening at the school board level. Because what we want to see is two things happening. One, we want to see folks talking about what is the mix of supports, services, additional time in the school day, additional time in the school year that we want to see in our schools in order to accelerate achievement and close opportunity gaps. And that should be a local conversation. Secondly, what we want to see is once that conversation happens, once districts make those investments, that the dollars flow down to the schools to make it happen. And then that the county and the state really hold school districts accountable for making sure that there's results.
And will a teacher like Pam have a bigger voice in all of this?
I think everyone will have a bigger voice. And again, I think that that's a shift that we're all going to have to make when this happens, to start thinking about what kind of advocacy we're going to shift to at the local level, how we're going to organize, instead of, again, thinking about sending busloads of people to Sacramento.
That is Arun Ramanathan, Executive Director of Education Trust West. Jonathan Kaplan is Senior Policy Analyst with the California Budget Project. We're talking about California Governor Brown's proposal, Local Control Funding Formula, which will give more money to districts with high concentrations of poor kids, foster youth, and those struggling to learn English. And now I would like to welcome Senator Lonnie Hancock to the show. Senator Hancock represents Alameda, Albany, Berkeley, El Cerrito, Emeryville, El Sobrante, Hercules, Kensington, Oakland, Piedmont, Pinole, and other towns, actually. Hi, Senator Hancock. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose.
Hi. Great to have you. So Jonathan Kaplan says that Governor Brown's plan will create much more equity. And Arun Ramanathan says that this is going to change the nature of advocacy and add so much more transparency and give the community more control. What are your overall thoughts on Governor Brown's proposal?
I agree with them. My overall thoughts are that this is something that's been talked about for a long time. It's been a long time coming, that the governor's proposal does some very important things in restructuring the way we fund our schools. It would, for the first time since I've been up in Sacramento, engage us in a process that people understand. School funding is so arcane that virtually nobody now can figure out the formulas, the money, the different hiatus points in which different things no longer exist. So it will be more transparent. The money follows the child has been a concept for many years that we've talked about. It's not a new concept up here. It will allow us to focus resources on the kids in greatest need. And so I think it is very good. Now, the governor's proposal, as you know, is literally just a proposal at this point. And we're working in the Senate through SB 69 to fill in some of the details. But at the moment, the Senate bill is also really a series of concepts. It doesn't have detailed formulas, and there's going to be a lot of opportunity for public analysis, public ideas to come into the process, and it's very much an open process at this point.
So talk a little bit about that. Where does this go from here, and how can people who are concerned about this issue speak out about the future of this plan?
Well, I think people need to let us know how they feel the governor's plan should be put into operation. I have a bill, for instance, that would modify some of the flexibility. The governor talks about complete flexibility for districts to spend their money. No more categorical programs. Well, one of my concerns is career technical education. I have a bill, Senate Bill 660, which would maintain funding for the smaller learning communities, the partnership academies, the career technical education academies that give many young people a reason to stay in school. These academies have been shown to keep kids in school, keep them from dropping out because they become really engaged in their education. So we're hoping to tighten up really what will be in flex, as they say, and what we need to ensure continues. We need to talk about the whole notion of what is funding adequacy for all schools.
Right.
Because there's no more money in the governor's bill.
Right. And Senator Hancock, we're actually getting a lot of emails from listeners about why the state spends so much money on prisons. And, well, I guess you could say little on education when you compare it to prisons, for sure.
I absolutely agree. And I'd say one of the reasons is because we've underfunded education for so long. Rose, and you may know, I chair the Public Safety Committee and I chair the Budget Committee on Prisons. And people need to be letting their legislators know they want those dollars to go to education, because there's a very strong prison lobby up here that keeps beating the drums for more money for prisons. And we do have issues in the state right now because the three-judge panel has told the governor we need to bring our prison population down further to reach constitutional standards. Right now, being imprisoned in a California state prison is cruel and unusual punishment, according to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I'm working very hard to put into place the ways that we know we can reduce the prison population and help people re-enter the community successfully. San Francisco is actually a big success story in this area. Its law enforcement, chief probation officer, sheriff, everybody, the DA, have been out in front of pioneering progressive ways of dealing with crime so that we can fund education, which is the way to keep our young people engaged with the community and full of hope for their future so they don't resort to being a danger to themselves and others.
And Senator Hancock, I know you have to go in a minute. Your bill, or your co-author of the bill, along with several other Democrats, SB 69, can you just give us a quick synopsis of this, and what is the status of that bill? Will it move? So is your hope that it moves on the side of Jerry Brown's proposal? I mean, what is this going to look like?
Right now, we're the Senate Bill 69 is really an outline. We are going to be filling in the details, and we need to hear from advocacy groups, from parents, from teachers, from everyone on what they think should be in it. It's right now it's a concept, and the governor's plan is only a concept as well. So this is the time for people to be involved. We're going to be looking at the May revise where the governor allocates money. There may be additional monies, and if there are, a good deal of that will go to Prop 98. And this is maybe technical, Rose, but the governor proposes something called concentration grants for highly impacted school districts with lots of low-income kids. There's a couple of things about that. Number one, we want to make sure the money actually goes to those students, because sometimes you have districts with pockets of poverty amid great wealth. And we want to make sure the money is used for its purpose. And then the other thing is it would be good if we could create a situation where no district loses money, because we don't want to pit schools against each other. We want there to be a rising tide that raises all boats. So we're looking for how we hold everybody where they are now and then focus the resources on the kids that need it most.
And Senator Hancock, do you have a minute to take a question from Arun?
Sure.
Okay, Arun, go ahead.
So, Senator, I really appreciate the great work that you've been doing on behalf of low-income students and English learners. One of the things that particularly distressed us about the rhetoric that was used on SB 69 was the argument that the districts with concentrated poverty didn't need additional dollars. I mean, if there is a school-to-prison pipeline, it's in those districts. And so shouldn't we be placing the focus on closing those $620 gaps that we have in terms of both equity and resources in our highest-need districts instead of you know, raising the boat for everybody's boat is being raised under the governor's proposal, but making sure that everybody gets the exact amount of money is not the focus of the governor's proposal.
And, Senator, we have just about a minute left.
Okay. And basically, that's right. We're trying to focus the money on those most in need. But it's not true to say that everybody's held where they are now. You should look at the numbers. The computer runs a loon. And actually, it's interesting because the California Department of Education and the Department of Finance don't have numbers that line up. One of the things we need is to have a common set of numbers to work with in this. And it is difficult to tell some districts that may have a pocket of poverty but not concentration that their kids are going to be left behind because they're going to get even less money than they did before. So this is, you know, I think you and I are totally on the same page that those districts with concentrations of low-income kids, they need to get the focus and they need to get more money per child than districts with very advantaged kids. But there are, those kids are spread all over the place. And, again, one of the reasons we keep Social Security is because everybody gets it. And the worst thing right now would be to start pitting school districts against each other when the real focus of the conversation should be we're still 45th in the nation and what we have per child in our public schools. We need to get back up to number 6, where we used to be about 40 years ago. And that means we need to work together to pass new revenues, new taxes, to go to education and so that we can adequately fund.
We're
actually out of time, but we will definitely continue following this and do a follow-up show because it's so important. Senator Lonnie Hancock represents the East Bay, including Oakland, Berkeley, and Alameda. Jonathan Kaplan, senior policy analyst with the California Budget Project, and Arun Ramanathan, executive director of Education Trust West. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar at Your Call. Thanks for listening. What's the best way to fight breast cancer? On the next Your Call, we'll speak with Peggy Orenstein about her recent New York Times Magazine piece, Our Feel-Good War on Breast Cancer. She has battled the disease and once believed a mammogram saved her life. Now she questions the promotion of early detection and the cult of pink. She wonders if raising awareness has become more important than saving lives. How have you been affected by breast cancer awareness campaigns? It's Your Call with Hanaat Baba and you.